This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Discovery Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
This is the first time I've been in the studio since...
Look at my calendar. You were here Monday, right?
No.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I flew to Vegas on
Sunday for that show.
It was last Monday.
No, it was last Tuesday.
Last Tuesday, okay.
Let me find my calendar here on my phone. The last time I was in this studio doing a show was April 2nd, so it's been 10 days.
Man.
Glad to be here.
So, well, the place didn't burn down.
No, it actually looks a little better. Maybe I need to leave more often.
Yeah, stuff gets done, apparently. When you take out. So, but no, it's, do you have any good Vegas stories? I know the wife's probably listening, so you may have to tell them off the break, but, I mean, anything at all you got for us?
Oh, I mean, again, when you... I'm going to take one of you two guys out there next year, assuming y'all will hang out with me another year. I've determined after going to this show, again, if you don't know, I was at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention. I think it would be very beneficial because there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, everybody thinks you go to Vegas and it's just party, party, party. And then you can do it, but this thing was, you go to these conventions and it's a lot of all day sitting in, you know, sessions and classes and a lot of good learning. And then at night you go have dinner somewhere and you know, but then you're getting up to do this radio show at 3:30 local time, like I said, you know, but you see things just walking down the strip, they call it. You will see things that you will only see in Vegas. I've got a few pictures on my phone of one or two things. I mean, there's just things, people dressed up in, we'll just call it costume, or just people not dressed up. We'll just call it that.
Hmm.
And they're just walking around, you know, only in Vegas.
It's only in Vegas.
It's the most unique. I mean, Vegas and New Orleans are two of the they're in a category by themselves. And I think Vegas goes to another level.
I mean, I haven't been to Vegas, but just knowing the stories and seeing the things that I have at least from people and pictures and whatnot, I can probably agree with that statement.
Yeah. So, no, I didn't spend a lot of time doing Vegas. It was mainly work. So.
Wow. Well, did you at least get something out of the work side of things then?
Yeah, there was a lot. In fact, at some point I want to have a little debrief on that, but you know, the audience doesn't care about that. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. A lot of good learning there, and it's like the second or third largest trade show that comes to Vegas. Ton of people. But I tell you one thing, I get everybody has no clue what they're doing anymore. When they get on their phone and you start walking around in a place like a convention center, and then you're walking, and then it's like getting in the left lane and driving. You forget where you're at and you forget what you're doing, and then you just stop or you walk right in front of somebody. It was about the most frustrating part of my week, having to deal with people. And you're trying to get from, all right, this class over here ends at 10:30 and I got to be on the other side of the convention hall, which is a hall.
Sounds like you're back in college again.
And people are just aimlessly wandering around, staring into their screen, you know, with 50,000 people wandering. A little frustrating.
Did you see anybody, like, streaming themselves? Because that happens all the time. I bet you at those things.
Oh. People all the time Facebooking.
FaceTiming.
Or FaceTiming. Facebooking. FaceTime.
You got close.
Bookface.
You got close enough. Yeah. That's all that matters. Anyway, well, since you were traveling,
I'm just glad to be here.
Well, yeah. And then since you were traveling yesterday, did you get to at least check out most of the Masters?
That is the one thing I wanted to bring up. I'm glad you brought it up. Isn't technology great? And this isn't, honestly, new technology. I got on the flight, and I watched either SportsCenter, which basically was nothing but Masters coverage.
Right.
From till they started, I don't even know what, because I went couple time zones, but what was it here at 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock?
I think it's 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock, it started, yeah. Here. All right. Basically, I watched all of the 3 hours of SportsCenter, either in the airport or on an airplane on the two flights. I had to go from Vegas to Phoenix to Tulsa. And isn't it awesome that you can watch TV on an airplane now?
It's a game changer.
I watched basically 12 or 13 holes of Tiger. Got to, I mean, when the plane landed in Tulsa, he was on the, he had just hit his shot into the 16th green. I did not get to see 17 or 18. Hustled out to the car, turned on my radio, and got to listen on the radio. Mike Tirico was doing the radio coverage and got to listen on the radio to the last couple of holes. I'm like, this is awesome. Yeah, here I am at 40,000 feet watching the Masters. It was great.
And then when you land and get in your car, you can listen to the Masters. So no matter what.
I guess if I wanted to be dangerous, I could have watched it.
Don't tell.
I didn't want to do that.
Say, don't tell Officer Breeden you're going to be doing that stuff.
I didn't do that. I would not be focused enough on the road, particularly on the Muskogee Turnpike driving 85, to watch the Masters and drive. So I didn't even think about that.
Well, it was a great day yesterday to start off, because first off, of course, the story is always going to be about Tiger and how Tiger does. Well, Tiger shoots 70 there in the first round, which, by the way,
And for a good stretch of his back nine, he was in the lead.
That's right.
At 3 under.
And just a little stat for you. The last three times he won the Masters,
he shot
a 70on Thursday. So there's that to look forward to. And I don't know if
I'm telling you, the Brooks Koepka is going to be tough to deal with.
Yeah. And I mean, him and Bryson DeChambeau, both
top
the leaderboard.
He had the shot on 16 that could have been a hole in one.
Mm-hmm.
Then the shot on 18, which just hit the stick and could have went in just as easy as it didn't go in.
I think he had four or five straight birdies.
He could have been 8 under just as easy as he could have been 6 under.
Yeah.
Just luck.
Yeah.
Just golf.
Yeah, just a little too much force on that one that hit the pin. But it's been great. And old man Phil Mickelson's right in the mix too. 5 under.
It is a star-studded Masters leaderboard headed into this Friday. So, I mean, you just think about all we have to choose from as sports fans this weekend here in Arkansas. We get the Masters, which I think for a lot of us, you know, that's going to consume a lot of my weekend. Considering the weather, I mean, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not traveling, not doing nothing this weekend. So, but you just think about what we can do watching TV this weekend. Arkansas baseball, which that's going to be front and center starting tonight. It's actually on TV. We're going to talk a lot about that because this is a huge weekend for the Razorbacks and over in Nashville taking on Vanderbilt. You got the Masters, which I think is, you know, those are 1 and 1A right there.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to separate those two this weekend. Then you got the Arkansas Derby this weekend. So, I mean, you've just got a weekend full of some really cool stuff to consume.
Yeah, so if you're a sports fan and you're bored this weekend, that's your fault. You're doing something wrong because there's just plenty to choose from, plenty to talk about. And, you know,
you're... Sunday afternoon, what are you going to be watching? Maybe that should be our poll question today. You're going to be watching Arkansas baseball? I mean, it's a two TV weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, you're going to have to.
What are you going to be watching on Sunday afternoon at 2:30, 3, 4 o'clock? I mean, that from about 4:30 to 6:30, it's as good as it gets on Sunday afternoon. Or you're hoping it is.
Man,
I mean, you're going to be watching Arkansas baseball?
You're going to have to do two screens. You're going to have both.
Now, the baseball should be winding down about the time the Masters
starts getting revved up
towards the end of the back nine. But, I mean, the Masters, once a year, I think that's, you know.
He said, you're going to have two TVs.
Well, I'm going to have two screens. TVs,
yeah. But the question is going to be is which is going to be on the main screen, I guess, because you always have just a secondary screen.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to be on the main screen? It should probably be the better question there because – you know, there's just nothing better, especially when it gets competitive, especially when there's some stars there late in the running there for the Masters. Because my pick right now is I picked Dustin Johnson. I know no one really likes him, but I picked Dustin Johnson. He's still in good shape, too. So I have some money on that. Hopefully that one can pay out for me. All right. So we'll see.
My brother had me get him 25 on Louis Oosthuizen while I was out there.
Why?
50-1.
Oh, okay. Well, then there you go. 50-1.
He liked something he saw out there this week, and we'll see. I don't know. He's hanging around.
Yeah, you're still just going for Tiger, right? That's your vote.
I think it'd be. I just think it's a great story. I root for the show.
Yeah.
If we're going to make this topic, this conversation stretch further, we need Tiger to be in the hunt. We need Tiger to win. If we want to make golf more of the conversation that people out there care about. We need Tiger to win another major.
Mm-hmm. And what better one to win
than
the Masters?
Be his fifth green jacket, be historic, be one behind Jack at the Masters. Obviously, still a few behind him all time in majors.
And that would get him 15, right? 15 majors?
Yes.
And Jack has 18, so. Yes. And that would be the story of the year, at least so far this year in sports.
I mean, that's the only way for golf to become a conversation again that we can have that you out there care about.
It's Tiger.
We can't talk about Bryson DeChambeau for 30 minutes.
We can talk about his hat,
but we can't. That's about it. We can talk about Tiger, and you'll listen. We talk about Bryson DeChambeau, even though he's leading the Masters, you won't listen.
Mm. Can I rock that hat in regular society? Like, just out and about?
Ruskin has a hat like that, or he did.
Does he, like, wear it out in public?
Yeah. Wore it in here to the show one day when we were working together.
As like, kind of, like, fun or, like, actually, like, a fashion statement?
They call him a derby hat, right? There's another name for him. I can't use it on the radio.
Yeah, we don't need to do that.
But, yeah. My dad used to have a hat like that.
My papaw used to have one like that. And he liked the
golf. I think you do all right in that hat.
Okay, yeah, I bet. Not setting me up for failure at all.
No.
Okay. You'd look totally good in that hat. No one would make fun of you for that.
What do you think, Ty?
not a fan.
Yeah. Well, Ty's right. Eating barbecue right now. He's not even going on the show right now. 6 a.m. and eating barbecue, hey, eating ribs.
A hungry boy.
Yeah, he's a growing boy.
Growing boy.
Follow the show on Twitter, at Hit That Line AR. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Now he does a tightrope back. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Another thing I wanted to get to, because in the previous segment, we were bringing up, at least Danny brought up some of the transfers that were coming out of Nevada and the possible ones of joining Arkansas basketball. They have had, their best players. I think I saw that they only have two scholarship players left on their team right now, two or three scholarship players. They hired Steve Alford. You know Steve Alford, the mm-hmm. guy that Arkansas fans did not want, and he's going to Nevada now too, which looks like Nevada fans don't want either. But, you know, it'll be curious to see just how, where somebody like Eric Musselman, who's relied on transfers a lot when he was at Nevada, and he knows that he needs immediate help, I'm sure he's going to be in the mix for a lot of these big-time transfers. And honestly, and this could just be me, guys, but I think that a coach, even at a bigger program, I'm not saying Arkansas or Eric Musselman should do this, but even a coach at a bigger program, the way that the transfers are going right now and how it's set up, there's some cases where you don't really even need to recruit the high school ranks, at least not as heavily. If you can rely, if you're really good at getting transfers in and getting and convincing guys to come into your program, and a lot of them being a very highly talented guys, you still have to do some high school recruiting, but
it's a balance.
Yeah, but you know, it's not where you have to rely on it completely anymore, just because the amount of players that are transferring out of programs, you could build a really good team out of them.
There is a problem with college basketball, though. I mean, there's what, over 700 players right now in the transfer portal,
roughly,
for basketball.
There's going to be by when it's all said and done. Yeah, each year has had about 700.
That's a problem.
But how do you fix it, or do you fix it?
I don't know. I'm just saying that we have made it as a society too easy to quit, and now we've just made the rule. Now the NCAA just continues to make the rules easier to just not stick it. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe that's just the old fuddy-duddy in me. But to me, it just doesn't feel right that so many student athletes. I mean, there are situations where you need out of. I get that, but there are 700. How many college I mean, there's 300 teams with 13 players, or 330 or 40 teams in Division I. Isn't that right?
Let's make it 350 for fun.
350 times, and there's 13 scholarship players, so there's 4,500 or so players. So divide that by 7% of your players are transferring every year. That's not good.
And just continues to rise each year. But see, that's the problem, is you have to find a balance of it. Okay, because I get what you're coming, because I think that there are many cases, probably even more so than what most of the media members will even say. But I think there is more times where it seems like these players are leaving because they don't want to stick it out. They're not happy with the amount of minutes that they're playing, even though they're true freshmen, even though they have some really talented players in front of them and whatnot. They leave because they want to play, which I get and I understand. But instead of sticking it out and trying it out, you want to play right away and you don't want to deal with anything else. So I get that. then I also get the other side of it where there are players that are in bad situations that need to leave, that should leave. So it's just a matter of, you know, it's each situation is different.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know if there's just one full-fledged answer to say, okay, this is how you fix it.
Yeah, where do you draw that line? I get it, but it's hard to decide if you're a program like Arkansas trying to pick through all of that and decide where the talent lies. What problems are you bringing in? Because all of those players are in that transfer portal for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
There was an issue at their previous place for some reason they're in that portal. And that's the stuff you got to sort through.
Yeah. But that's the job of the head coach, to go not only talk to that player, but talk to where he was at previously and get all the information and investigate that issue.
Because how many players on Duke's team or Virginia's team or Kentucky or keep going down some of the teams, Texas Tech. How many of those teams have players entering the transfer portal?
Sometimes they'll have it, but if they do
this year,
this year, I don't even know. There's still many. Any?
Kentucky had Quade Green, their former point guard. None of the other schools you listed.
Yeah, I mean, that's my point. I mean, when things are going good and your program's winning and you're playing, I don't want to call the transfer portal the junk pile or a trash heap for college basketball, but you've got to be careful about, there's a reason that player's in that transfer portal.
Yeah.
You got to get to the bottom of why they're there.
Yeah. And if you're a program like, say, Arkansas is in this situation right now where they need immediate help, and if there's some some talented big man in there, a 4-star, 6'10" big man, then yeah, you're gonna want him. You're gonna want to go after him. You're gonna want to do that. So I don't know exactly, if there's what you can do. I mean, is there adjustments that you can at least make if there was? Because these players already, for most part, have to sit out a year as a penalty or whatever you want to call it if they do transfer to another big school. That's obviously not keeping it from happening, but there's even been waivers and things that have happened from that too, where they don't have to sit out for that long.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're,
I don't think there's any turning back on it.
No. So this is just the way it is right now.
I mean, I have to like it, but I don't think there's any putting the toothpaste back in that tube.
And football's getting just as bad. I mean, now with the new rule where you don't have to, you can play 4 games and still redshirt, which has been really beneficial to a lot of these players. And the fact is that, you don't have to lose your eligibility as easily and you can transfer out. I mean, this transfer portal really became something this past college football season, where not only were players transferring out, but they were transferring before the season was even over. Like, they were putting their, like, Kelly Bryant, that whole thing. He had played, or at least was dressing out for Clemson football. And then in that same exact season, he's visiting other schools during their football season.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Nance was a guy that, he left early and transferred out. Now, he didn't announce he was transferring to Missouri till later, but it was just in the middle of the season. So even football is getting to that point. And, that's because that's another thing that's bothered me a little bit, like you did, Tommy. But it's like, what can you do to fix it where you have a player that doesn't even finish out the season and he's transferring? Like, it's one thing to transfer, but when you are not even looking in your situation, you're like, you went through spring practice, you went through summer workouts, you went through fall camp, you started in the season, playing or at least being on the bench and being a part of the team, and then you're transferring out and you're taking visits to other schools. Like, that seems wrong.
And that's my point. The system has made it too easy. The system is too easy for it to just quit. And that's but I also understand the counter argument. You only get one 4-year shot to get
that's
this
right.
I understand this isn't life where, like, you're going to work in an industry or you got a 30-40 year run in front of you to work, So I get that too. You only get one 5-year period to play 4 years. So I understand that too. And you don't always get to control who the head coach is that you're playing for.
That's right.
So I understand all of that. I mean, it's a balance, and I see both sides of it. But just because you're not getting enough minutes doesn't mean you should just quit. Maybe it just means you should practice harder. Maybe it just means you should watch more tape. Maybe you should eat better. I don't know. I just think we make it easy to quit. You know what? It's easy for coaches to quit too and move on to another situation. I don't like it on both sides of this.
Yeah, because coaches can get up and leave and no penalty happens. I mean, nothing. They don't have to sit out a year.
There's a financial penalty.
Well, yeah, but most of the time, though, is it them personally paying it? Like if there's a buyout? Not really.
Not usually, but they do have to pay the tax ramifications on it.
But. Correct. But, you know, it's just as far as the actual punishment, it's not that big of a punishment unless, I guess, you're fired or whatnot. Then you get the big payout. So at least there's, you know, if it's not like if a player gets cut, he gets some sort of
usually
payout.
Usually your new employer as a head coach is going to take care of your buyout.
Yes, normally that's the case. Let's go to the phone lines. John is in Fort Smith. What's going on, John?
You know, on the portal, it seems to me, yeah, I see the double-edged sword of it. But I also see, like, the necessity of they're altering the portal so that maybe we can retain players. Because what do they have to wait? At least in basketball, at least 1 year before you can go to the NBA?
Yes.
That's the rule, right? Yeah. So, I mean, in order to retain players, I mean, we kind of have to placate them because they're not officially, and I say officially in quotations, getting paid. You know, with a situation we don't know about. But, I mean, we've got to incentivize these guys just a little bit just to stick around because, like you said, I mean, maybe they figure out, I need to put the time in. And if they're in a bad system, like you said, the guys in Nevada, they don't want to play. Some of those guys don't want to play for that coach. And so we see them wanting to leave. We understand that. If they want to follow the coach where they feel like they can gain more. And I will be opportunistic and say that, you know, there are, like, what, two McDonald's all-pro players from Nevada that may follow Musselman over here. And, I mean, that would only help us. I mean, oh, man, that's just an opportunity for growth. So I see it, and I see what you guys are saying, but you've got to incentivize them somehow to stick around instead of just jumping ship.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate the phone call, John. But, see, that's the issue is that, yeah, it's like – everything dealing with this is always, yeah, you have to do this, but you also, you know, you get it from this side. And that's why this rule and this situation is just kind of in limbo right now because there's not one set answer that helps and benefits one side and the other and both can compromise on it. You're just not in that situation right now. And so that's why I feel like this is just the way it's going to be and continue to be because there's no other answer. There's no other way of doing it.
But it also limits the growth and popularity of college basketball, I believe. And that's part of the problem.
Yeah, it does too.
Because the star, how popular would college basketball be if Zion was in the game 2, 3, 4 seasons versus the one?
That would be insanely different. I mean,
right.
People would be watching college basketball at a higher rate. Yeah.
Right. That's the problem. The best players only play 1 year. Mm. And that's another issue college basketball is having to deal with, and I don't know, there's just no fixing that right now until you change the rules that are out of your control.
Yeah, and it's the same way. Well, if you even think back to when Arkansas was, you know, at their pinnacle in the 90s, where college basketball was really at the height, the reason people love college basketball is just the names, like Christian Laettner.
They played 3 years at least.
Yeah, I mean, even the Fab Five guys, I know that, you know, Chris Webber left early, but those guys were at least there for 2 years, three years, so you at least got that experience and got to get to know him and got to watch him for a long time. So, yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Subscribe to Hit That Line on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Kish is joining us. We were talking a little bit in the previous couple segments about the transfers and the possibilities of Arkansas getting in some transfers. We believe that Eric Musselman's going to have to go that route in order to get some immediate help to replace Daniel Gafford. And somebody tweeted at me yesterday, is like, what are the chances that Daniel Gafford comes back? It's not happening, folks. He's gone.
No.
It's over. So don't even think that's an option.
Agent, right?
Yeah. It's not an option. So don't even worry about that. But yesterday, Eric Musselman went on the Jim Rome show, which apparently him and Jim Rome actually have some sort of friendship. He's been going on a show for many years. And, you know, we got to talk with, obviously, Eric Musselman when he was introduced, and we had a press conference with him, too. But he doubled down on the fact about Arkansas and the current state that they're in and the fact that, you know, they're not really a rebuilding team.
You're talking about a team last year that was two games over 500. You know, Coach Anderson's a phenomenal coach. He did a great job here over a long, extended period of time, and he won a lot of games. I have tremendous respect for him. So it's not really a program that didn't have success because they did make an NIT. And we do have a lot of really good young players. I mean, it's a roster that had a lot of freshmen and sophomores this year. And you hope that those younger players, they certainly should make a big jump going into their sophomore or junior year.
So I'm not saying this is a bad thing at all. But the fact of the matter is that Eric Musselman is putting an expectation on himself, on this program, on this team, that, you know, this is not going to be a rebuilding year. This is not going to be a year where they're going to take steps backwards. This is going to be a year where they're going to continue to grow, to continue to get better, and there's no reason that this team can't make the NCAA tournament next season. I mean, he addressed the players and said that. He's doubled down on it when he was asked about it. And when he has that expectation and he continues to say these things out, and at least in the public viewing, that's going to have Razorback fans jump on board and start saying, okay, so if he believes that, if he's saying that, if that coach who watched a lot of film, who knows the game of basketball, who knows the type of team that he's taking over, and knows that he's going to have some help, if he's saying that, then I believe that's what the expectation is going to have to be, that this team is going to be a lot better than what we even think next season. Because, Tommy, if you remember correctly, when it was going rough for Mike Anderson, we're like, when this team loses Daniel Gafford, I mean, what are they going to do?
I mean, sometimes to be a winner, you got to talk like a winner. I mean, you can't come out talking low expectations. You can't come out Lou Holtz this thing, poor mouth that, hey, no, we're not going to be good for a while, and you know, just trying to trick everybody. I mean, he's trying to sell his players on their good. I think a lot of this talk is meant not for fans and not for opponents and observers. It's meant for the players to hear. I believe you're good. I believe in you. I, as head coach, believe you are good. And I'm telling everybody. I'm telling the world. So I want you to believe in yourself. I think that's part of the psychology going on here.
But do you think that if it keeps going this way, though, and the expectation continues to get set, which I agree with you, it's a good thing, and that's what you want your coach to do, but it doesn't go that way this season. You know, it's going to kind of, it's not saying that people are going to be like mad and upset and wanting changes or anything like that, but it's certainly, you know, like, and maybe this is just where I'm at too, because my fear, and it's complete, two completely different situations, but you just don't want to find yourself in the situation like you did with Brett Bielema when he first came in, where he was talking all this noise and saying that how this team's going to do that. I haven't watched any film on him, but I know that we're going to pick us last and see what happens. You know, that's not what you want, because that was embarrassing when, yeah, everyone picked you last, and guess what? You finished last. So, and I'm not saying Eric Musselman's doing that, but you just don't want to have the expectations and the hype, and then it'd be really disappointing.
But let's just say you had you think this is a tournament team. He has proclaimed there is enough talent. I don't think he said they would. I mean, let's go back and revisit. Maybe I need to listen again to what he said. Did he say they would make the tournament, or did he say there's enough talent in this room to make the tournament?
He says, this team has more talent than the team that I went to the Sweet 16 with.
That's not declaring you're going to make the tournament.
But he also said that the expectation is making the NCAA tournament.
That's not saying we're going to make the tournament. Right. We're going to the tournament.
Right.
I mean, you got to listen carefully to what he said. He said there's enough talent here to make the tournament.
But that, and I understand that. But I am saying
that's not what people are hearing. That's not what people are taking that and running with it and saying, he said he's going to the tournament. That's not what he said.
No. But he is making that expectation. And so when he has that expectation,
what he's saying is he believes in his players. What he's saying is what he has seen so far. He believes these guys are talented enough. Now, are they going to put in the work? Are they going to practice? Are they going to do the work on their own? Are they going to eat right? Are they going to do all the things that is required to get there? He said the parts and pieces are there. He didn't declare we're going to the tournament. That's not what his statement was.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's been a little bit of confusion, particularly on social media, about that.
Right. But, again, I understand that the fans and the people that are listening, that's not what they're going to hear.
Right.
But at the same time, though, if they say that the pieces are there, and you say that there's talent enough, then who's the fault going to lie on if they don't make the tournament?
Did I not hear that right? Am I accurate on what I'm saying here?
No, you are accurate. But that's
y'all correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you are accurate. But that is what I'm saying, is that but people hear that and they say, hey, if he's telling the team our expectation is making the NCAA tournament and there's enough talent in this room to make the NCAA tournament, then people are going to say, okay, he believes that this team will make the NCAA tournament. Now, he's not saying it directly and saying we're going to make it, but by using those comments, that's what people will hear, and that's the expectation that they're going to set for themselves as well. And I hope at least the realistic, logical Razorback fans aren't going to freak out or be ticked off if they do not make the NCAA tournament this year. Because, again, you want your coach to have confidence in their in his team. It's just when you add that added expectation, and fans have been burned so many times before where they got excited about it and excited about what they could be, you know, it's just a matter of, you're going to have to back up this talk that you got.
Listen, we've all worked in places, been in organizations where you've had bosses and people you've worked with that believed in you and supported you, and ones that did and ones that didn't. And it's always easier to work in an environment where you work with people that support you versus people that don't. People that believe in you versus people that don't. And I think that obviously he's trying to get off on the right foot with these players that, hey, I believe in you. He's trying to build a relationship that, you know, I've watched you guys on film and I believe you are talented. I believe you are good basketball players. And you just thrive more in an environment like that. When the person I need to satisfy believes in me, and I believe that they believe in me, it's not just lip service, you know. And he's got to make that genuine, and that just takes time. It's got to be authentic. That takes time, but you're going to get a whole lot more out of that than, I mean, he really has. There's not a lot of other approaches to start this relationship with these players. I mean, it's amazing that because of technology and because of just the world we live in today, that we get to see some of these initial conversations. I mean, think about, Chad Morris and his initial player meeting. Now, Eric Musselman and his initial player meeting. These are some of the first times new coaches have come in, and we're inside the locker room or inside the AD's living room with the coach.
Hearing the same thing that the players are for the first time.
As media, as fans, as the world. That's pretty neat, isn't it? That didn't happen. That didn't happen when Brett Bielema arrived. That didn't happen when Mike Anderson arrived. Now, maybe it's because they could have, but it's just what is easy to distribute to the world,
right,
with the push of a button on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or those type of platforms.
Yeah.
It's just pretty amazing what we can do. I mean, if they wanted to, they could have went live with that. Now, obviously, they want to edit, make sure what.
But oh, yeah.
It's just amazing what we can do now and get to understand that and then put that into context and have this conversation and then figure out what it means. He's trying to develop that relationship with those players. Who knows what's been said? And it just makes me wonder what Houston Nutt said 20 years ago to his players when he arrived. You know,
I'm sure I could think of some of the words. Yeah.
You know, or a Stan Heath or a Pelt. I mean, you just keep going through the list of in the major sports head coaches that have arrived. And then these initial meetings, these meetings always happen. Bobby Petrino, you know,
don't tell him what guy said,
you know, because you only get one chance to make a first impression. And he was trying to make a great first impression on his team. That was important to him. Clearly.
Yeah. And in fact, according to reports, this came from Steve Sullivan, actually, on Twitter. He says during Coach Musselman's first scrimmage, he had to stop the Razorbacks 3 or 4 times and say, to play fast, you have to run fast. There will be no jogging on the court. So,
who does that sound like?
As far as just like that comment?
I mean, it sounds like Chad Morris, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it also sounded like, it was going to sound like Mike Anderson, too, because that was kind of the thing of playing fast. Now, that direct comment didn't happen, but yeah.
I mean, the whole...
It's all about fast.
The whole thing about all being about fast and pace and all of that is...
Pace and space, baby.
Well, I mean, Chad Morris has been all about speed from here. I mean, to me, I just saw a lot of correlation there, a lot of parallel.
Yeah, yeah. And you're not going to... Listen, folks, you're not going to be playing Virginia basketball.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.